Good evening, everybody. I'm Bob Sherman, and this is the Great Artist Series, Conversations in Music with Outstanding Performing Personalities. Tonight, we begin a month-long cycle that will gradually bring four remarkable conductors to our WQXR microphones, and we begin today with the long-overdue return to our studios of Julius Rudell. Since Julius is busy with Hoffman's at the Met these days, we thought we would begin there, specifically with the Barcarolle. Now, usually we hear the Barcarolle in its purely orchestral setting. In the opera, of course, it is a gorgeous duet opening the Giulietta act. And we'll hear it that way, sung by Beverly Sills and Suzanne Marcy, with, need we add, Julius Rudell on the podium.
Thank you.
The Barcarolle from Tales of Hoffmann and Julius Riddell conducting the new Philharmonia Orchestra. Julius Riddell, welcome. It has been far too long since you have been with us here.
Yes, but it's nice to be back.
It certainly is for us. And you're quite busy with Hoffmann these days.
Yes, we are Hoffmanning a lot, actually. And it's a nice cast that Jim has given me, and so I'm enjoying myself very much.
When you have a run of performances, how many are you doing altogether this fall?
Will you believe 15?
That many?
Yeah. No, well, they're spread out a little bit. Some of them go into January. Uh-huh. December, actually the middle of November, I'm not here until January, and then we resume again in January.
Well, when you have a spate of them that
yes.
way, so that really the memory of one is very fresh in your mind when you go on to the next,
mm-hmm.
does it change? Does it?
Oh, well, yes, particularly in French opera, I think, or in Italian for that matter, too. I think you, each time you do try to recreate it, and so there are certain circumstances that are a little different. They have to do with atmosphere, they have to do with the singer's well-being, with even the audience reaction, you know, that lots of things go into.
No, that's not really what I mean. Obviously, each performance will have its own shape
yes.
and will take its own form. But I mean, when you do a Hoffmann 3 days after you did another one,
yes.
doesn't it make you somehow say, aha, now I can fix that little thing that went
oh,
wrong?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It lets you build.
Oh, absolutely. There are, in fact, sometimes when a singer had, you know, gone a little bit off or something, tiny little thing happened. Luckily, nothing major happened except that one time when we had the three tenors.
Yeah.
But then you sort of, next time you sort of let your eyebrows go up a little and everybody's at attention and we fix it.
Yeah.
But these are the wonderful things about live performances.
That's well, you mentioned the three tenors, and this was quite an event, I gather, for everyone
yes.
who was there.
Yes, apparently it was a first for the Met of some sort.
What does it do to your blood pressure as a conductor when all of these things start falling apart around you?
Nothing, absolutely nothing. You are concerned with the moment and you have no time to think of yourself or anything else. I think, as a matter of fact, anyway, I think one, as I know for myself, when I conduct and I may have been in agony before the performance for some reason or other. It happened to me once. I took penicillin, which I shouldn't have. I had a cold and doctor prescribed penicillin, and I literally blew up like a balloon, and I couldn't even wear my shoes. Luckily, it was an opera performance, not a concert. So I, and my heart was racing like crazy, and I went into the pit. I had taken my shoes off, actually. I walked into the pit without shoes, and conducted. When I started to conduct, I absolutely didn't feel a thing. I think they could have taken my legs off at that moment. I wouldn't have noticed it either. So you do concentrate very much, and everything else becomes secondary.
Julius, what is the conductor's equivalent of the stage fright that grips almost any solo artist, any singer, pianist, whatever?
Well, I think there are some of us, and I know there are some other colleagues who have the same problem. It's not a problem, really, but sometimes before you go out on the stage, a certain amount lethargy is, you feel as if you can't move, as if you're somehow under a drug, or somehow you're not able to function properly. And of course that disappears the moment you walk out. But sometimes before, you say, my God, my eyes are just what falling down, and my arms feel leaden, and my legs don't move. But then we go out and nothing at all.
In this 5 minutes or so before you go out on stage, what are you likely to be doing?
Well, I usually go, if it's an opera performance, I go and greet the cast and say hello and sort of, you know, give them a little friendly smile, which may be the last of the evening. And if it's a concert, then you're concerned with yourself. I mean, you may talk for a moment with a concertmaster before about one thing or another. If there's a soloist, you may just go and say hello and make him feel at ease or her feel at ease a little. And otherwise, you just concentrate and just think a little bit ahead.
Well, we are going to think ahead to, let's see, December, when you appear at Covent Garden.
Yes.
Is that a debut?
That will be a debut in Covent Garden, yes. In fact, I'm going to be spending quite a bit of time in Covent Garden this year. And that will be Fledermaus, of all things. So that's a nice way to...
Well, that should make you feel right at home.
Oh, yes, very much. And I understand they have a very interesting production, which is a multilingual production of Fledermaus, if I understand correctly.
Really?
Yes.
Ah, that should be fun.
Yes.
Do you remember hearing that when you were growing up?
Oh, my God, yes.
It was around you?
Oh, yes, around me, in me, about me, above me. Anyway, yes, of course.
Thank you.
The overture to Strauss's Die Fledermaus. Julius Rodel will be conducting it at Covent Garden in the not-too-distant future, December, to be precise. This recording with the Buffalo Philharmonic and Julius Rodel, of course, music director, except not for that much longer.
No, it's my last year as music director. It'll be my sixth year, and I think that's a nice round figure.
What prompted you to go there? Why did you want the pressure, let's say, of music directing, and why did you decide now to let it go?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, I did it because it came about the time when I decided to leave City Opera, and that was caused a great deal by the fact that I simply found myself being more and more driven into the administrative aspects of our profession and less a musician. And it was a wonderful detour, because I started out actually being a musician, you know, and somehow was thrown into that corner, enjoyed it very much. Mm-hmm. And but it became finally a bit oppressive. And so I had always, I'd always done a lot of guest conducting of symphony orchestras, but I thought it would be nice, would be wonderful to have my own orchestra, and also it would be nice, I figured the pressure has got to be less as a symphony orchestra. And more time, evidently, would be left for music making. Well, that was true to a great extent, but there are other circumstances as well. Buffalo has been, as you well know, not a very happy area as far as finances are concerned. It's a depressed area. And so it has been difficult to maintain the orchestra at the level that it has and has had. And it involves also a great deal more time with trying to get people to donate money and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that, again, I was driven away from pure music making. And finally I decided it's about time I spent most of my time really just making music. So after 6 years, I said, well, this is it now.
So tell us about some of the music you'll be making.
Well, I mean, we just opened with a nice Brahms second, and just a couple of days ago we had another concert, Mahler fourth, and then very near in the future I'll do Faust Symphony of Liszt, which is a lovely piece, which is not often done, a bit long-winded at times, but it's a lovely piece, I adore it. And then I go on to, that goes simultaneously with my performances here at the Met. That works out very nicely, dovetails.
Okay. And you like that. You're going, I understand, to Houston in November the same way, to conduct both the symphony and
yes,
the opera.
Yes, yes, I love that. So in symphony, there I'll be doing Flying Dutchman, and in the symphony I'll do, I think, Schubert second, Kurt Weill second, which is a symphony I like to do.
It doesn't disrupt you that way, going from one
hat
to the other?
No. One informs the other, as it were. You know, it helps rather than hinders. No, I think it's wonderful, because that's also, you know, the reason why I was able to function at the City Opera as I did, because there were times between seasons and I could go away and do other things and so refresh my outlook.
Now, we are going to represent Julius Rodel now in different type of repertoire, take you out of the opera, first of all,
right.
And hear a concerto by Hans Vogt, or at least a movement of it. We played one movement, I think it was the first movement, when Young Ah Kim was here,
yes.
And I guess he had the same tape that you brought me today.
I would think so, yes. It was done with the Bayerische Rundfunk Orchestra, and it was a commissioned work by them for him, and we recorded it in Munich. In fact, it also worked out well. See, I was there for the opera, and while I was there for the opera, I did this recording as well. And this is an excellently made piece, really. It's a very good piece, and Young Kim plays it dazzlingly, beautifully. We had lots of fun recording it. Thank you.
last portion of the 1981 violin concerto by the German composer Hans Vogt, played by Young Ah Kim, for whom it was written, and the Bavarian Radio Symphony under the direction of our guest today, Julius Rudell. We'll continue in the Great Artist series in just a few moments. Julius Rudell is visiting with us today in the Great Artist series. Not too many of us will be able to get to your Covent Garden performances in December, and probably not too many to Houston in November, but at least we can catch up with you at the Metropolitan here.
You can catch up with the Met or in January.
That's right, that's the Hoffman's. And the January date is with the American Symphony.
Right.
And last time I saw you, you were conducting the American Symphony at the Beethoven Festival.
So that's true. It was fun, too. It was a nice... It was a nice atmosphere there. I thought it was a lovely place.
One thing I wanted to ask you, and I thought of it at the time, you were conducting, this was the fifth anniversary of the festival, so they made you conduct the Fifth Symphony and the Fifth Concerto.
Right.
Leaving aside the Emperor for a moment, because that does have the dovetailing with the soloist and it presents a different set of circumstances, but the Fifth Symphony, which is the work that every orchestral player has done over and over and over again, and I presume you have conducted over and over and over again. How do you approach a piece like that and not say, oh my gosh, that thing again? How do you keep fresh? How do you keep excited about it?
Well, because it is so great. I mean, how can you not be? I don't think it ever pales on you. I think it is, it's so incredibly vital, so strong. The ideas are so fabulously presented. It's offers such wonderful opportunities for everybody, players, you know, that I don't think you can ever get tired of it. There's precious little music that you really get tired of. I mean, if you do that, it's mostly your own fault, I think. I mean, if music of such greatness is at your disposal, I think it's every time it's a privilege you do it. I think you feel... so drawn into it, I couldn't conceive of ever saying, oh my God, not again, never.
Well, then let me rephrase the question in a slightly different angle. Is there not a temptation or a tendency to do it the way you have heard it and the way you know it and the way you like it and the way you did it last time? What gives you a sense of flow and growth?
Well, of course. I mean, there is an architecture to be considered and there are the composer's wishes to be considered. But within that, you know, there is, first of all, some leeway. And secondly, it again depends. You know, I'm often amused as that there's one musicologist who has made a point of finding out how many mistakes there are in certain orchestra parts or scores. But the basic is that in one score he'll find that the passage for one instrument is marked piano and the other one is marked forte. Same passage for same instrument. And one overlooks the very praxis of the time. I mean, there was perhaps in the one place there was, an oboist who was particularly strong. So the conductor asked him, please, instead of making it forte, make it only piano or mezzo forte, to balance things. In another place, that same place may have been played by an oboist who had a very weak tone and said, please, more, give me more. So you would mark it up to forte or even beyond. But these are the things, since you recreate each time, you have to, and with the forces at hand, and these forces are changing. I mean, sometimes you have, I mean, as you do in anything, you have sometimes a stronger player in one section than in another. You have a different sheen in the orchestra, let's say, a different approach. I mean, there are different schools of playing, as we know, and it depends a great deal on what the orchestra, this particular agglomeration of musicians, is used to, and then you work from that. But there are so many... and besides, there are certain niceties that you can always still discover. I mean, a little three or four note middle voice that somehow has often been slighted comes suddenly. You say, well, why not give it a little more prominence just to see how it fits in? Because he must have meant something with it. It wasn't just so. I mean, there are always little things to rediscover, even in a great masterpiece that you've done many, many times.
We are talking with Julius Rudell. And when he goes back to Covent Garden after the New Year, it will be to conduct Samson of Handel. And we, of course, remember with great fondness, your Julius Caesar here at the City Opera.
Yes, that was a...
Did you realize at the time what revolution you were stirring up there?
Not really. I just thought it was time we did Handel, and I thought Julius Caesar. At that time, Handel was kind of... Everybody said, oh, my God, why do Handel in opera house? It's boring and all that. And so many people tried to dissuade me. And I thought, well, okay, Julius Caesar, at least you have a something to grab the unsuspecting and unknowing opera lover. So the title. But in fact, it was really, really a rather strange and funny thing. Even at the time, if you remember, when we did the Julius Caesar, the Met was just moving into the new house. And Mr. Bing had commissioned Samuel Barber to write Athene and Cleopatra. And when I opened with Julius Caesar, Mr. Bing for a while was very angry with me because he thought I was trying to show up by using a similar subject and using the great Handel. I was trying to show him up. And I had, of course, no such intention at all. In fact, I admired Samuel Barber's music very much. And there was, as you know, in most of these Baroque operas, the story is a wispy little framework on which great arias and ensembles are fixed. Mm. And it has so little to do except the character's name. It has certainly nothing to do with the Shakespearean Julius Caesar or any other historic Caesar that we know about. So that was one aspect that kind of amused me at the time. But I didn't realize really that this was, in a way, the beginning of a whole revival of Handel's operas, which has absolutely taken wing since then.
Is
And we may say, with some justification, that that's where the Handel revival began, right here in New York at the New York City Opera. Julius Rodel, at that time, director of the company and conductor of the first performances and this cast recording of Handel's Julius Caesar. In these first act scenes, it was Norman Tregel in the title role, and the duet that closes the act, Maureen Forrester and Beverly Wolfe. All right, we're almost at the end of our time, Julius, but we mentioned that you're going to be conducting the American Symphony January 6th. Is that the date?
That's right, yes.
And we didn't talk about the program.
No, it's an all Wagner program. It's mostly from all the music is from The Ring, and the main pièce de résistance is the first act of Valkyrie.
How different do you think this will be with the orchestra on stage and in a concert setting than it would be if you were conducting it in the house?
Oh, some, but not really all that much. You know, the first act of Valkyrie has often been done in concerts. I know Bruno Walter used to love to do it, and it is, it's not much different in terms of the coordination of everything than, let's say, the song, Das Lied von der Erde, you know, mm-hmm. It's much less problematic just in terms of balances and performance than let's say the Mahler Eighth, which is of course requires a slightly larger group. But this should be fun, and then after some more, just looking ahead, then I'll be back in Covent Garden again with Placido to do André Chénier later on. So that sort of is the outline of my season.
Very busy time for Julius Rodel, and I'm delighted you squeezed in a few minutes for us.
Delighted
Great
to be
pleasure
here.
Indeed.
Thank
so
you.
So good luck, and we'll see you again soon. Not the 2 or 3 years since you were here last time.
Right.
We'll have to make it a little more rapid return than
mm-hmm.
that.
Happily.
Thank you. And we'll have word of next week in our Great Artist series after these final announcements. Barcarolle to sail into the sunset today. But as I mentioned at the outset of the program, we will be continuing our conductorial conversations next week, although our discussions with James Levine will also focus on his chamber music performances as well. In any event, it's always fun when Jim comes to call, so try to join us if you can. And until next Sunday, for the Great Artist series, this is Bob Sherman.